I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Posh Nosh Gal, and I'm really excited to be chatting with French chef Pascal Osignac. From a young age in southwest France, Pascal has always wanted to work with his hands. But instead of his first passion of stone cutting, Pascal's built his fame and fortune cutting fine ingredients at the fabulous Club Gascon restaurant in London. This is where he's held a Michelin star for the past 18 years, and we're going to hear all about that in this interview. Bonjour, Pascal, ça va?
Bonjour, Shalina, I love your French accent.
Well, I was just practicing it.
That's good.
How are you?
I'm great. It's slightly hot today. We are like going on the peak of the summertime, we are just in June, so
yeah,
it's quite intense. I think it's roughly 28 now in London.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm staying indoors. I'm staying in the AC most of the time. I'm right next to it because I struggle with the high temperature, with the high heat.
So actually, I am in my greenhouse and it's quite hot, I have to say. Yeah.
Anyway. It looks lovely. So how have you been keeping busy during lockdown?
Well, okay. So let's back to mid-March when we stopped on the Thursday, 20th of March, all the company. It has been really not organized because in few days before, customers were just canceling all reserves for all our places. And we end up with two covers at night, the last two or three nights beforehand. So it was not acceptable, to make it. Even for customer point of view, it was not nice, obviously. So we said, okay, we can't go further. And it was kind of sad, to close things, to put some food in a bin because we couldn't manage some food, for a certain time. We can't freeze like this, so all the fresh goods we gave to the team, and we gave some to the labor. But after, we had to get rid of the rest. So that has been a bit of sadness, I will say. And after, we had no clue what to do.
Yeah. Where,
how to say goodbye, how to manage the team. So, of course, all my staff is on furlough. I've got roughly 100 staff over the six company.
Yeah.
And they are mostly European. So at this stage, they are back to their own country, waiting, even if they are on furlough. So they are still in the company until we believe it's going to be a possibility to reopen safely and with enough customer, because this is the main key. But in the meantime, I manage my life with doing sport. So I discover online on Instagram the free live session of sport.
Okay.
Which were like every half an hour, you had someone new coming, a new PT at your home and doing some hardcore. And I was like, wow, that's tough. Even my body, even if I train, I do, because I do kind of boxing things and fencing.
What is the Instagram handle for the free half an hour exercise? That would be useful to know.
So there is one guy which I follow in the morning. His name is, actually I know only his code name. It's MW5, he does things at 8 in the morning.
Okay.
MW5 Fitness. There is another one, so he's on his balcony. Sometimes he's got the kids coming, working with him. But he's very strong, and he does half an hour good workup, workout.
That's good to know.
Yeah, good. And after, you have something which is completely new to me. Is a cross between sport and yoga. I'm not keen on yoga because I'm not very flexible, I would say. But it's a new, it's a club called the Move Studio in Notting Hill. And the guy is called Christian. And he does, so if you click on the Move Studio, you will see this guy is like, the way he does, we feel like all monkeys. He does movements which I discover muscle or elements of my body which I never think it was possible to have, you know. So this is, and this is not easy, but it's very interesting to have this time off and okay. to be positive in a way, because you know, when you're locked down, you need to find some hobbies, indoor, obviously, mostly. And actually I've got the gardening, because I've got indoor gardening, but also I've got outside gardening from the church beside the restaurant, because I live next to Club Gascon. I'm on Smithfield Market, so okay. I'm very close to my business. What else? I cook, I bake. So I took 2 kilo, actually, I think 2 or 3 kilo on my belly. So that's why, you know, the gym has to be very active again.
Yeah.
But I can't wait to have to see back the sports center open outside, because gym indoor is good, but it's, you need to have more action. For me, I need more action with a live, you know, a proper face-to-face action, you know, with a PT, you know, especially when you do boxing or fencing, it's like a sharp, physical, intense and short time to act, you know, which I like. I don't like running. I do running. But I do running just for the cardio, not for the pleasure. Even if I have to say that when it's like nice weather, not as hot as now, but in the early morning, from St. Paul going running to the Thames, you know, along the Thames, doing a Big Ben, Tate Modern, back to New Borough Market, you know, and to St. Paul, it's like 7 to 8 to 9 kilometers, depending.
Yeah.
It's very, very pretty, I have to say. Enjoy it.
Well, it sounds great and good to know that you've got lots of positive things going on during lockdown. You're exercising, you're gardening, and cooking. They're all really positive things.
Yeah, but you have to. Why not? You know, it's. I don't want to be depressed. There is no point. You know, I think we are lucky enough to be in a nice surrounding. Also, being able to be self-sufficient, because as a chef, you can transform food. You don't need to buy, you know, prepared food, so you can do things at home. So yeah. it takes time, and also it gives you a positive transformation. So it's like in a restaurant, you know, you do for yourself, or you do for your close friends, for your girlfriend, you for your my animals as well. I've got cats here.
Yeah.
But it's also it's a kind of rewarding to do things with your hands, to transform things. I do DIY at home. I transform some things in the flat. You know,
amazing.
Taking good time.
Yeah, and so the new guidelines are out, 4th of July. Are you going to be 100% ready to open? Are all your suppliers ready to go?
No, I don't think so. So we are launching, we have launched the takeaway at my bistro Comptoir Gascon. Mm-hmm. Since over a month now, it's picking every weekend. It's better and better, so there is definitely a niche for it. We are now launching this weekend, from tomorrow, I mean the kitchen tomorrow, Cigalon, so the Provençal cuisine and Corsican food as well. So it will be both produced at Comptoir, because the kitchen at Comptoir is quite large, so we have enough distance to play. Mm-hmm. My head chef from Cigalon will be there, Julien Carlon, and we are going to produce the two type of French cuisine dedicated to our DNA. And I'm working as well for the 4th of July or onwards, the possibility to do a new restaurant. When I say a new restaurant, it's a new summer restaurant next behind the church. So where you have Club Gascon in Smithfield, there is the Saint Bartholomew the Great, which is the beautiful church. And behind it, there is a garden, which I'm part of it, taking care of the garden. Oh, and I'm also a beekeeper. And when you enter in a garden, there is the first part on the close pair where it's like an empty space enclosed in the fence of the churchyard, which we are going to do a restaurant. So it will be like an outside space, up to 30 covers. And that will be maybe up to end of September, I think, I wish. So the idea is to open it every day for lunchtime. Mm-hmm. And it will be linked also to the weather, because of course, if it's a pouring rain, there is no point to open it. And it will be like a menu dedicated to barbecue and bees. So it will be vegetable and barbecue menu from 12 to 3, and after it will be snacks and drinks up to 7 p.m. So that's the idea. It's for the local and also for people who wants to have a safe space, but outside, you know, because the thing is, in London, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of terrace. The city of London, obviously, where we are located, is also banning all outside space until now. So, and maybe for the close future, that we don't know. So it means that this I think is going to be interesting for the locals and I wish for other type of people from London coming to have this kind of barbecue time.
And the concept of this, is it a result of COVID? So you've just kind of thought of the idea during this time?
Yes and no. 2 years ago, I've approached a champagne supplier to link to Baranis, you know, where we have Cigalon restaurant in Chancery Lane. Below there is a bar called Baranis, which is a pétanque bar. Yeah. Not only pétanque, but you can play pétanque indoor all year long. And it's all, and everything is linked to Saint-Tropez, the ambiance of the Côte d'Azur, indoor, style of Brigitte Bardot, a bit dated like this. And because of that space, existing space beside the church, I wanted to do a pétanque court outside on the summertime and to have this kind of barbecue. So the idea came up 2 years ago already with like a house champagne. But the thing is, you know, when you ask for a sponsor and when the life is normal, the budget for sponsors are already taken all over. So you need to plan well ahead to make that possible. Okay. And also you need to convince the Church of England, you need to convince the council, so you have a lot of things in between which doesn't help you, you know, to process, which regulation, I would say. So because of the COVID, and also because all the outside parties, Taste of London, Ascot, all these kind of big events have been cancelled as well, or frozen. So it means that budgets are still on somewhere. And, you know, it's easier for a supplier to be able to get a budget now to do something outside, I would say. And so we are all working at the moment to make it possible as soon as the regulation will permit it. And so it's on the process. So I can't give you more details now. I think you are the first to know exactly what's going to happen. But I'm quite confident and excited with this different type of menu. Obviously, it's not Club Gascon menu. It will be like a garden menu. Okay. I'm going to call it a garden club, actually, because it's behind Club Gascon. So garden club, Club Gascon, ta ta ta.
Yeah, and no, that sounds absolutely brilliant. I think that's a fantastic idea, and there's lots of positive things that are actually coming out of this. I just wanted to take you back to your beginnings, actually.
Ooh la la.
So you went to culinary school in Bordeaux at the age of 14, and by 17, you were given a job at Les Trois Marchés in Versailles. How did that come about?
All right, so actually, just a rectification, it's not Les Trois Marchés, it's Les Trois Marches, the three steps. Because if you say Les Marchés, it's like a market.
Okay. So my friend
is not so good. Yeah, it's fine. A march is a step and a market is a market. Marché is a market.
Okay.
So actually, how do you start this? So my mom, my parents live in La Rochelle, and my mom used to run a shop, a leather shop in the center of La Rochelle. You know, La Rochelle is a very touristic city. And there were two women which were coming to the shop to see my mom. They became friends, and they were very close friends of Gérard Vier. And so my mom mentioned myself to this woman when I was still at school in Bordeaux. And when I had my exams, this woman said, "Oh, you know, we can introduce your son to Gérard. We know him very well, and we can try." they did it. And actually, just after my exam, because my exam were in June, and in end of June, I had my exam. And a week after, I was in Versailles, starting the 1st of July, in this two Michelin star restaurant, which was very, very famous at that time. It was a new world for me because, you know, I was far away from everyone, all my friends, all from the school, 500 kilometer difference, you know, so no more family, alone in Versailles, working at 17 years old. It was great and scary at the same time, you know, and this is what I wanted because I was quite ambitious, but in the same time, it was very, I felt quite alone, you know, and taking all the risk by myself, which is fine, but at that time, you don't think the same, you know. And also to work in a team with a team which they judge you, and when you're a kid, when you don't know things, because it's not because you got the exams that you know things, so you start by the beginning, you know, and you feel more like a kind of a slave. When I say slave, in two brackets, so you do the hardcore time, you know, you do things where the staff doesn't want to do it technically, you know, because this is roughly the progression, you know. And actually, I really enjoyed it, even with this act. And the team said, you know, this guy, yeah, we can keep him. So, yeah, I had a cut. So Jean-Javier said to my family, you know what? If he wants, we can keep him in the restaurant and he doesn't continue back the school. So actually, I should have been back in September to the superior class in BTH, and I never been to the school again.
Oh wow! And in hindsight,
so I continue to the Tramarche.
But in hindsight, do you wish you had continued with school, or are you happy with carrying on the job?
But it's difficult to say because. The day you say no to school, at one point, there is only one action. I don't think I have any regret. I didn't have my back. So, you know, I just continued to work in the field of what I wanted to do and to achieve. So actually, I was fine, you know. And when you are 18 years old, life is, you know, you are next to Paris and you are like... experimenting and discovering life in all aspects, you know. So, I think it was great. I think I liked it.
And you moved on to work with Guy Savoy as well. How was he to work with?
Yeah, so that was one of much after, but Guy Savoy, yes. Well, Guy Savoy was, he had two Michelin stars at that time. And it was actually the year where Gordon Ramsay was there as well. We got the same age with Gordon. And I never met him. I was in a meat section and vegetable section. And the kitchen was, you had the pastry on the basement and you had like a square kitchen. And the year I worked, I think it was in 1991 and 1992, to be clear. And it was the time where I knew the old kitchen and they transformed the space to the new format, Rue Troyon. Not at the restaurant which is now moved because Guy Savoy moved to La Monnaie now.
Okay.
But Rue Troyon, so I knew the old kitchen and the new kitchen. Massive difference, I have to say. And it was tough. It was tough. Not Guy Savoy. But the team was, we were like 25 chefs roughly. And it was a tough time because when you have more responsibility, obviously you are like more judged and you need to be even more precise. So you grow up, you know, so you gain technicity and you need to achieve things. And I liked it, I really liked it. But after Guy Savoy decided to do more catering industry, to do more like catering events because I wanted to have my own restaurant.
Right.
And when you work 80 hours or 70 hours in the kitchen, you have no more time for you. know, because that was the roughly the weekly hours.
Yeah.
So I wanted to step down a bit and to work for a place, a company, and actually I loved it also. It was very different. The woman in charge, she created a company called Yes Reception, and her name was Yafa Ederi, and she was a game changer on the cocktail party in Paris at that time. And all the big groups like Fauchon, La Durée, Potel et Chabot, they all copied her at one point. You know, it was like she was crazy, a good crazy woman, but she managed to get a new way of delivering a new format, a new type of flavors to the Parisian scene. You know, when I say the Parisian scene, it was like the fashion world, it was like the VIP people. So I was in charge of this, not only me, but I was part doing the private dinner and all this kind of very specific parties, which I learned a lot as well, because when you do a catering, you need to be, you are mostly with a small team. You go somewhere, a place. It could be an empty space. You need to redesign it. You need to bring the goods, the food. You have maybe no kitchen. So you need to adapt to a situation for one moment, very specific. Comparing to a restaurant, people are coming to the place and all the team is already organized to deliver something as an experience in one place. But when you do a catering, it's just the reverse. It's just, you need to please the customer for one specific moment of their life, celebration, cocktail, an event, where it's a one-off. You can't miss it because you can't make it back tomorrow, the day after, you see what I mean? And you have so many little elements to be in charge. You know, if you have a party and you have no ice because the delivery is not coming, because of a traffic jam, it's a disaster, for example, you know, and you can't create ice like this, you see. So all these elements to get to the team, the waiters, the floral act, the all to deliver an experience, it's very difficult. And I think it's the most difficult part of the hospitality sector is to do parties like this, you know. Right. Catering events, I think, is more difficult than the rest. But it's very rewarding as well, because you learn a lot, because you are much more versatile in the work. You think your eyes are broader. You can have a better view. You're not just focused on your food as a chef. You are thinking bigger, wider. You try to anticipate the upcoming problem on the side, you know. And I think this is a very good way to progress yourself.
Right. Well, it sounded like, you know, you were doing really, really well. What was the driving force behind moving to London then?
Frustration.
Frustration.
I have to say. Frustration, because when during this time, I worked 3 years in the catering industry. And that gave me some kind of trial time off in Paris to find a virtual restaurant. And I was helped by, it's called La Bourse de Commerce. So it's an institution where they help young entrepreneurs, young people to develop or to create a budget or to find a location. So if a restaurant collapses, they will find someone to take it back. You see what I mean? So we are creating, a proper story about it, and you defend this, you know, in terms of with a solicitor, you are in front of banks, you know, and so you take a lot of risk and trying to sell your project, you know, to actors which are necessary for this. And so I did 3 times this in 3 different restaurants in Paris.
Okay.
And I didn't achieve that because most of the time it was a money problem, because my parents, I'm not coming from a rich family, and I didn't want to involve my family to put any royalty into it. So I was like, I was very, very disappointed, you know, when you're young, when you are ambitious, and when you have a good CV, and when you think that you are able to do something. In the meantime, there was a big group who have heard of myself, and they were developing a complex in front of Saint-Tropez in Grimaud. It was called Les Restants, it's still called Les Restants, actually. And they were building the site, and they proposed to me to be in charge of the restaurant and to create the kitchen and to create the decor in that restaurant at the burgeoning moment. So, which I did. So it took 2 years. So I did two seasons there, creating the restaurant, creating a Provençal menu. So you see, that was Provençal cuisine. I was not on Gascon style at that time, you know. Right. And actually, I really, it was very tough, I have to say. But I was employing staff which were very seasonal, you know, like seasonal staff. It means that in winter they are in Courchevel or in the Alps, and in summertime they are near Saint-Tropez. And the staff there, which are doing this type of job, they are funny, enthusiastic, sometimes very, good, but also very, they are not really passionate about what they do. You know, it's more entertainment. I'm not saying everyone, but some of them, they are not in your field, in your mentality. And it was not very easy to manage that. So I've decided, I sold the company. And it was the time where a family friend of mine, Vincent Labéry. So Labéry in France, it's a very big name. It's a very famous name, the Labéry brand. It's a brand of salmon, foie gras. It's a very important family in Gascony, like Darroze, like many others. But Labéry is very famous for French people.
Okay.
And actually, Vincent Labéry, the son, at that time was just divorced, and he was in the working in the property investment, and he wanted to have a restaurant. He wanted to create a restaurant, but he had no clue how to make it. And his sister, Fabienne, which was a very good friend of mine, did the lunch with all together, and we became friends from that moment, and we decided to set up on a paper a virtual restaurant of 50 covers. But not in France anymore, in Europe. So Vincent's family, and Vincent himself, is from Dax, from in Les Landes, so he's near, and I'm from Toulouse. So we are both talking about with the same type of DNA of cuisine. We like Gascony food. So we thought that being two person, business partner, and to be able to do something which has a completion in terms of abilities outside France could be a good thing. So Vincent did some research while I was still in Saint-Tropez. Mm-hmm. And actually between the good and the bad of capitals of Europe, London won. Okay. So Vincent moved to London with the kids, and actually I was traveling once a month to London to see the result of his research. And it took roughly a year to find a place or a location, which is now Club Gascon, but at that time it was an empty space. And we signed, so we loved the area because it was the meat market. It was very, very British, very old fashioned, very kind of the city limit of London. So more accessible in terms of rent.
Yeah. And
so we signed the lease in 1997, on summer 97. And it took a year to transform the place to a restaurant.
Wow.
The place, in the 70s, the place used to be like an Italian pub. And a century ago, it was a Lion's Corner house. So that's a very British history. So the place has been accepting customer for long time, you know. So it was not just a new restaurant there. It was new for us. We create a new type of restaurant, but the place itself has received a lot of customer over decades, about the century.
It was in Smithfields, right?
In Smithfield, yes.
And it was actually it was a very quiet area at the time. So it was quite a big risk, actually, for you both, for you and for Vincent, to be going.
It was the biggest gamble of our life, because first, to be a business partner, because we never worked together. Secondly, to be French, to have never worked in UK for anyone. Third, to find the location in front of the meat market. At that time, it was the life of the mad cow. So the place, the area was very unsafe in a way, because they transformed all of it afterward. But when we signed the lease, it was the mad cow. And also, in another way, it was also the end of the filming of four weddings and a funeral, because the fourth wedding in the movie was at Saint Bartholomew the Great. And we saw, and when we signed the lease, it was like the camera crew was doing the thing, you know? So it was very, this kind of crossover things, you know, the city limit, no pavement, no light, the mad cow, our story. It was so extreme. We said, this is where we should go, you know? And it was accessible. So we opened in 98, in October, the 13 October 98, and the 13 became our lucky number. But the bank, we opened on a Monday night, and the bank told us, don't open at night, you will have no one. The first night, we had 30 covers.
Oh, brilliant.
And 3 weeks later, we had like more than 600 calls a day.
Wow. So,
you see, sometimes don't trust your bank.
You got to take the risk and see,
that was also something from France, don't trust the bank. And and actually, listen what you believe, you know, listen what you, as a message, if some young people want to listen or hear that. If you believe in yourself, don't try to convince so many people, because do it. Find a way to achieve something by yourself or with someone which are not doing the same job than you, but to complete your lack. And I think this is the way, one of the way, it's our way to have, you know, passed the time, the test of time, with achieving few things over two decades now. I'm not saying we are safe. I'm just saying that as a story, as a message, we have done something. You know, we have proceeded something, and from scratch, from nowhere. You know, nowhere, nobody was expecting us, and we are still there. So this is quite cool.
And you took many risks, because another one was traditionally a French cuisine, it's quite formal. But another risk that you took was, you know, the small plates, tapas style, which is, you know, it's so unusual. So, you know, trust your instincts. That's another thing.
That also was part of our thinking, because, you know, Gascon cuisine, if you go to Gascony, if you go to any type of, in a village, to any type of restaurant, traditional restaurant, when you eat there, you need a nap, because the food is quite
heavy,
volume and heavy. So being in London, being next to the city where people are working, we can't afford that people are going to be on a sleeping time in the afternoon. We thought that we need to keep the flavor, but to reduce the volume, first act. Secondly, I was watching my mom when she was going to a restaurant. In general, she was preferring having two starters than a starter and a main course, because for her, the main course was too big.
Yeah.
Okay, second thinking. Also, if you look at French cuisine in general, or French restaurant, I'm not talking about testing menu, I'm talking about, you know, like the normal format, start, main, cheese, dessert. It's a lot. Most of the people, they are going with the start, the main, and they swap the dessert or the cheese, and they go for coffee. So the dessert is also a missing part, or time to time you sell dessert, you know. So all in all, we were thinking that how to change that formula. So we thought that instead of having a start, main, dessert, we were talking about plates. And we did. I did chapters of a series of plates. So it could be the meat section, you know, the fish section, the vegetable section, the foie gras section, and actually everything was on small plates. And the main thing was every dish had 80 gram on the plate. So that was my the target. So the main product on each plate was 80 gram. So right. It was a garnish. It was like 110, 120 gram complete with the sauce, you know. And a normal meal for customer, for any of us, if we eat normally, we are going to eat 400 gram of food, you know, if you pamper yourself. So if you divide this, it's four plates. So the idea was a format of four plates. So that's where the service, we manage the service to say, okay, you need to have, you choose between a series of chapter between four plates. And everyone was doing a composite, I would say, of four series. And they could be served at once or one after the other one. It was up to the customer. So we gave to the customer flexibility. And also, they were not obliged to have four plates. You could have three plates, two plates. So it means that they organized their budget. So the idea was to be much more flexible in terms of French cuisine and to be more fun. So it's not a concept or creation. It was just an adaptation of the Spanish cuisine or the mezze. It's something already existing on different type of cuisine. But the way that a French restaurant was the first, we were the first to do it, and organizing from scratch like this, that was new. We became a game changer because of that, I think, not only by the location, and also because we had foie gras from starter to dessert, so you could do a foie gras menu, which is not the case anymore now because the fact that the evolution make people more aware of eating differently, and the foie gras, it's still there, but it's less in your face, I would say. That's how Club Gascon evolved or started with this kind of small portion, small format. And after, we have been copied by plenty of different type of cuisine because it was a success. Because of that success, it has been transformed to different type of cuisine. And it's absolutely fine and possible to make it. Even now, you see still a lot of pub doing a tapas plate or small plate. So I call it frapas because it's not nice to say small plate, it's a bit boring. To say petit plat, it's very Frenchy. But to say tapas, it's the French tapas, so everybody can understand it, you know?
Yeah, really.
So you got the tapas.
Well, it paid off because you got a host of accolades, including your Michelin star in 2002, and you've held it ever since. How exciting was that moment to get the Michelin star?
Wow. But you know, because when we create Club Gascon, we never knew it was not a restaurant dedicated to the high gastronomy.
Right.
It was we discovered the success instantly via food critic, because at that time you had no smartphone, no Instagram, no, you know, we had to go about the last century. So people were able to smoke in the restaurant. That was that time, you know. People were drinking Armagnac at the end of their lunch. So that was the time, you know, we opened. And the food critic, at that time, they had the power. But because we knew nobody. So when Fema Schler came first to do a review in the standard of Club Gascon, she gave us a fantastic review, but she was the first. So just after, we had all of the reviews who came up. So Egil, Jonathan Meads, you know, and when you have a review in the Times and on the weekend, you have the Times and the Sunday Times in one weekend, I can tell you that the Monday morning, the phone, we had only one phone. We had no reception because we were a very small team. It was smoking because it was nonstop. So the power of a review was very interesting, not anymore at the moment. You know, now it's linked, it's you, me doing food critic in a way, you know, going to restaurant with this kind of new app. It's a different world. So we were packed for 10 years, lunch and dinner nonstop. So when we received the Michelin star three years after the opening, it didn't change the feeling of the restaurant. The restaurant was full, but it changed the perception of from a bistro to a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And that was very, very clear to the people. We became a restaurant. Before, we were like a kind of funny bistro, trendy. Right. And the day after, we became a restaurant.
Yeah.
To me, it was, I've cried, you know, because when you work, when you do your training in Michelin star status restaurants, and I put all of this into brackets. I kept that in France and I moved to a new country to set up a place. So I didn't copy anyone. We tried to do with Club Gascon, in the name of Club Gascon, you've got everything said. Gascon is the area, club is a selection. Because we were two person, Vincent and myself, we were ready to do a nightclub, you need at least to be two, the minimum requirement. So in the name, you've got everything. So we decided to do something which was completely different than the rest, with the format, with the deliverance, with the area, even with the competition. At the time, when we arrived in London, Pierre Kaufmann was still working, but he sold the company afterward. And he was one of the first customers to visit us.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But he was the master of the Glasgow world in London, obviously. So we did something completely different than him. And also the location was completely different, you know. So there was no copy paste, you know. And obviously when you have a credit of the Michelin celebrating this after a certain time, so they took their time to give the star, it was very emotional and very happy. And after that, I became much more relaxed with myself, less hungry with the ambition, much more thinking more horizontally, not anymore on verticality.
Well, that's so funny you say that, because a lot of people who actually have a Michelin star say it's, you know, their passion and drive to then retain the Michelin star becomes more stressful. So how was it for you to keep it for so long?
I think for me, I take it as a little motor on a daily basis. So it's like a kick in the morning with the team. We know that it's a Michelin star restaurant. So we need to prove, doesn't need to have the pressure nonstop. I'm not a shouting man in the kitchen. You know, I'm quite, not relaxed, but you know, when he has to be delivered, he has to be delivered, because I am in the kitchen. I am working in the kitchen. I'm not doing mise en place, but I'm always at the service, plating, testing, making the sauce. So I am with the team. And actually, for me, it's like consistency, like a little engine, and you need to, it's like an entertainment. It's like you bring the team together and they are happy. And obviously, if someone doesn't have the standard or the some quality, we push that person to go on that way, you know, to find a way to be better, you know. And if that person doesn't find a way, then we say goodbye. You know, it's so how to keep it. I have no clue. I don't know how to keep it. It's now 18 years. And I'm with this new life now, I don't know. We are closed for 3 months. I don't know how Michelin will react with this year, how they are going to rate restaurant this coming October, for example, because it's a different way. So I have no clue if that is going to continue the way, because some restaurants, they will have to readapt to the scene, to the situation. Maybe they are going to change the format. Maybe we are going to change the format. We don't know yet. I don't know. I don't know more than what I just told you, how to maintain the standard Michelin star.
Yeah, well, I think it comes to you quite naturally. You've had it for so long, so I am positive that you will still have it, and I don't think there's any issue there. You mentioned earlier on that you have this particular liking to the date of the 13th. Are you superstitious, or is it just by chance?
Yeah, so actually it's a funny thing, because we opened the 13th of October 98, Club Gascon. And beside Club, there was a cafe, which was called Stone Cafe. And that place was just transformed and it collapsed. So a few months later, after the opening, like 9 months later, we took over the place and we transformed it as a bar, because we were so busy. People were queuing in the winter time along the street, and we had no space to keep them warm. So we thought we are going to do a one bar next to the restaurant. So which we did. It was called Cellar Gascon at that time. And so we opened Cellar Gascon a year later. We opened officially. And it was also a 13th of March. Okay. But that was very unfortunate. You know, we haven't I haven't made the link. No, it's right. Just after I realized. So what's happened is the year after, we decided, because actually the bar and the restaurant were, it's two individual places in the same building, but with two different kitchens. There is no link, you know, in between. So we were missing space, because my kitchen at that time, my club, was a shoebox. Okay. So we had to store, and we had to find a way to do pâtisserie. And we needed to find another place. So on the other side of the market, where you have next to Fabric and Smith of Smithfield, at that time, they were not existing.
Right.
They were on building site, both of them. I'm talking about 2000. And in 2000, we opened, in 2001 exactly, we opened Comptoir Gascon, which was a deli, just a deli, because we had no license for, it was just a takeaway, a shop. And we opened it the day before Valentine's Day. And obviously it was the 13th of February. So actually we opened three places in less than 3 years.
On the 13th.
On the 13th.
Yeah.
So I decided from that, that was a lucky number. So that was unfortunate, but when we opened Le Cercle in Chelsea in 2004, the sister restaurant of Club Gascon, which was for 10 years, so we had the place, we created the place. Le Cercle was in Sloane Street. Have you been to Le Cercle? Have you heard of Le Cercle?
I have heard of it. I haven't actually been there though.
Okay, so now it's finished. But the Cercle was, so actually when, because we had in 2002 the Michelin star, the restaurant was exploding in terms of fully booked, and we're starting to be copied a lot. So we decided we had the opportunity to create a restaurant in the West End, in the West Side. And obviously, Smithfield, where we are, is very masculine, meaty, Citibank, and the opportunity was to be in Sloane Street. So it's just opposite. The very girly, very posh, and the place, the building was, they had a basement which should have been a swimming pool, and the landlord decided to don't do anymore the swimming pool. So it was like a massive box, emptied, like a concrete box below the building, which they said, we want to do a French restaurant and we want you to be in charge. So we saw that place and we create from scratch a restaurant called Le Cercle. So I called it Le Cercle because after a club, it could have been a clan. The clan was too Scottish, and Le Cercle was very feminine because the cercle is a clan. It's like a balloon. It's very feminine line, I would say. And also Le Cercle of Chelsea. Chelsea is around later. So that was for me like a community of people from Chelsea joining that restaurant. So we opened it the 13th of May 2004. But that was organized.
Okay.
In the 13th. So that's the story of Le Cercle. After, there was only one place which we haven't opened on the 13 because we couldn't, was in Westfield. We have a place in Westfield in Shepherd's Bush.
Yes.
And the year before Westfield opened the doors, we have been approached by the marketing to set up a concept in the food court. Like not only us, but most of Michelin star chefs of that time, very specific Indian, English, French, you know, to create a hub of Michelin star concept in the food court. And at the end of the day, we were the only one Michelin star to set up something, which we, so when Westfield opened, the doors of Westfield opened, we were obliged to open with the doors of Westfield, and they opened the 30th of October 2008.
Okay.
It was the week where the financial crisis arrived.
Okay.
Just that week. And it was not obviously a 13.
Right.
And we opened, so the Westfield opened the doors and we were in a food court, very well located, where we still are actually, in the middle of the food court inside. And we opened a place called Croque Gascon. So Croque Gascon was the idea of a croque monsieur, but on a Gascon flavor, with the first duck burger. So the place was delivering duck burgers. So we were the first one to do duck burgers in the world. For the masses, and also top up with foie gras or not, doing a lot of things, hot dog with the flavor of Gascony, with Toulouse sausage, with the mustard mixed with the pruneau d'Agen. So you know, giving the flavors for a mass market. Yeah. But it was very conceptual, very interesting. But we didn't find the right target for us. So
okay.
After a few months. The place collapsed.
Okay.
We were losing money, quite a lot. And we were the only Michelin star restaurant in the old food court and even on the old Westfield operation. So we, as a French chauffeur, we were maybe too clever and not finding the right customer for us. So we decided to stop, to keep the place, but instead doing French over the 53 different offers in Westfield, there was no fish and chip. So we came up with the to Westfield operators and say, okay, to survive, we need to change completely from a French offer, we are going to be English.
Another risk.
And from a concept, we did a non-concept. And actually, we reopened the 13th of September 2009, a place which I called Chip and Fish, Chip plus Fish. So just reversing the word.
Right.
And as a no name, is a non-concept. So from a concept point of view, as a failure, we changed the name from a French offer, we became English, and I was in the kitchen with the team. We changed the menu, we had the same equipment, and I had no clue how to do fish and chip because it was a survival guide.
Yeah.
And so because you know a shopping mall is always open, so when you do decoration, makeup is at night. So early morning at 7 a.m, I was in the kitchen with the team, trying to find out doing things. And where we had the churros, because before in the menu we had churros, we call it the shishi, the churros. And you need to have an arm into the bath for frying. We took the arm out, and that was the bath where we cooked the fish and chip, the fish in the batter.
Right.
So it was not organized as a fish and chip operation, you know.
My gosh.
But the funny thing is, so we reopened the 13, we changed, and the new name on the 13th of September 2009. At 11 in the morning, we are the queue starting.
Fantastic.
Like we were always there. And it became a success, a machine. And when we resigned the lease 5 years later, we made the old proper kitchen to do fish and chip with an ultimate up-to-date system of a fish and chip operation, which we kept until last year to 18, because it was to 8 to 18, 10 years lease. And last summer, so we had to renew if you wanted to keep back the as an operator inside the food court. So we had all the food court that had been stopped, redesigned. And to get back the site, we needed to change or to update or to do a new format. So we came up with a new offer, a lift on the fish and chip, okay. which was called, as I said, Chip and Fish. Mm-hmm. And the new name is called Catch Me.
Yes.
So since last summer, we have a place called Catch Me in the food court. But you see, the story from the beginning was Croque Gasco, financial crisis, collapsing, surviving, success, voilà, on one side. That's a funny story.
Brilliant story of how you've taken something and you've kept going. Your resilience has just paid off in the end because you just keep trying new things.
Yeah, you need to change, you need to evolve, you know?
Yeah. So
obviously, you know, to be a French Michelin star chef doing fish and chip, I've been attacked time to time with some people because we don't use the right ketchup or, you know. So now we know, we know more. But at the beginning, it was a bit of erratic time, yeah.
Yeah, well, like I said, you've done so well. And so did you open Cigalon and Bar Anis? Were they open on the 13th as well?
Yes, so we opened in 2010, yeah. It was in November, I'm not sure it was the 13th,
okay.
to be honest, exactly.
Okay.
But if it was not the 13th, the wish was on the 13th.
Yeah, you had like an opening in your dreams on the 13th.
But my cookbook, for example, which I made in 2010 as well, my first cookbook has been published out on the 13th.
Okay. Wow, there's this big thing about the 13th. I think it's always in my mind.
I keep going. I'm still on the 13th. I tried, if we do things, so for the garden club, I don't know at this stage the timing, but if it's the 4th, it's the 4th. But if it's later, maybe it will be the 13th of July, who knows? Just the day before Bastille Day, to be honest.
Well, fingers crossed, I hope it's the 13th because it sounds like it's very lucky for you. So Cigalon and Bar Anis, again, they're a restaurant and bar combination. So you clearly like that formula.
Yeah, so Cigalon and Bar Anis, it was another, so we still had the cercle when we opened Cigalon and Bar Anis. So what's happened is one of our chefs, Julien Carlon, who was chef de partie at Club Gascon, became very important in our company. And he's from Marseille. And we trust him very much so. So we decided, we had the opportunity to create a new place. And where you had Cigalon, before it was an auction room for Sotheby's. Sorry for my pronunciation. Sotheby's.
Sorry.
Yeah. So it was like a place for auction for books in Chancery Lane. And below it was a pub. They sold the place and we decided to transform that place because the place, I don't know if you have been to Cigalon, it's like an atrium where you enter and in the middle of the building, you got a beautiful rooftop where you have the light. So the ceiling is very high and it's like a rectangular piece. So we wanted to create a greenhouse inside the place to represent a bit of Provence. You know, if you go to Provence, to the Luberon, you've got a private house called MAS. Mm-hmm. And behind you got always a garden which is a bit hidden with the barbecue and beautiful landscaping, and you got also the crickets, you know, the sound of the summer coming and the lavender all over you, and you drink rosé with the barbecue style. So this is the ambiance of what we wanted to recreate in London all year long. Yeah. So Cigalon as a name, again, you see you had Club Gascon, C'est la Gascon, Comptoir Gascon. After you had the Cercle, starting by a C, after you had Cigalon, because Cigalon means two things. First, it's the cricket. So in Espanol, it would be Cigala, and in Italian, it would be Cicada. So it's the sound of the wings of the cricket in summertime.
Okay.
But also, I don't know if you know a writer, in the French writer called Marcel Pagnol, which is a very famous writer. And also, he did some movies. And one of the characters is Cigalon. And Cigalon, it's a nickname for Cigale, for cricket. Because you could have cricket, Cigale, Cigalon, or Cigalou. That's the local name in Provence. And Cigalon is also a character of a man as a chef. And I can't tell you the story because it's quite long, but it's a very nice story about a chef and how a chef can, a chef work all his life for delivering food for people. Okay. And one day, that in that story, that chef decided to don't serve any more customer because he was fed up, because he was not rewarding himself enough. So he decided to do some kind of tripes, and he was so you got all the atmospheric ambiance, and these tripes were, he was cooking them, and the customer were on the terrace outside waiting with the family. We are back to 1930, and that's the story, and actually he never shown up, and he was eating the food dedicated for the customer for himself because he wanted to pamper, because he was fed up to deliver food for people, and he wanted to have his life back. So it's a kind of, we could feel time to time this kind of story.
You could feel like you are alone. I hope it's not going to be you.
No, but because in the kitchen, you know, we eat, most of the time we eat fast because the service, we have pressure in the kitchen, and with our chefs, we are like, always in a hurry. And we need to eat because we need to eat. And before service, so it's like 10 minutes, stand up on the side, very few restaurants have things organized because square meter in London is expensive, not only in London, but in many places. And even if we have the place organized, the chefs like to, they like to eat quite fast. Anyway, so that was interesting story. And we wanted to bring this kind of two stories by the name, in the restaurant. So Cigalon is also linked to Club Gascon by fact of message. You know, it has intensity message, and Julien from Marseille embrace the story and is in charge of the restaurant since 10 years now. We are celebrating 10 years this year. But when you are, as I said beforehand, you know, when you are working in the catering and when you see things broader, you try to deliver a message because you can't do too many things. You need, people remember you for something. They go to a restaurant. If you think you want to eat Indian, you are going to say, okay, I know these three type of, or these five Indian restaurants, each of them, they are specific. You have something specific. It could be for you, the ambiance. It could be something as a roast. It could be something because of the spice, the way the size of the, whatever. You will memorize something, very small thing, and this is part of your, you have kept this in mind, and sometime to time you want to find it back, you want to see it back, you want to taste it back, and you can't please everybody. It's very difficult, you know, to be mainstream. So I think we deliver high message, but for a niche restaurant. That's what is Cigalon, that is Club Gascon, Comptoir, la la la. Except the fish and chip, except Catch Me, which is much more mainstream.
Right, but also Bar Anise is slightly different as well because you have you can play petanque in there.
Yes. So
are you any good at petanque?
Oh, ça va. I'm not the best one, but I can play. We can entertain some pastis afterward. even if I lose. We can play with the drinks after. The idea of the pétanque was very, for me, very important because below the restaurant, there was this space, which was a pub, very English, very British pub, very old fashioned with the wood paneling, but they had a lot of booths, like hidden space. So we create this kind of cave, like you can find in this kind of old Saint-Tropez with the Brigitte Bardot style, the music, the yeye music. And also we have this kind of gravel going to the to an area where we are doing storage. And this was not, it was too narrow for putting tables and too long. So I said, okay, let's do a pétanque court. And Baranis became the first indoor pétanque place in all UK. Now we have been copied, but obviously when things are successful, you are copied. I think it's the, it has to be like this, I don't know.
But how much do people love it? Is it very successful?
Because Baranis is successful, but Baranis is not located, if it was in Shoreditch, or in a more funny or like in an area where you will have more, I would say, public, it will be very successful, much more successful. But for where it is in Chancery Lane, it's very successful.
Okay.
We are very happy with it.
And you use the space as a private hire as well. That forms a large part of your business there. Is that right?
Baranis is used for private party.
Yeah.
Club Gascon, we have a semi-private room now. After the restaurant can be booked, all restaurants can be booked for party in general if they want to. But and Le Bar next to Club Gascon, which used to be called Cellar Gascon, now it's called Le Bar, because we have redesigned it 2 years ago with Club Gascon makeup inside. So Le Bar, we have different levels, so we can organize three parties at the same time.
Amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier on about your deliveries, and we placed an order for home delivery from Comme Toi Gascon, and we ordered the Marmite Royale and the Magret de Canal. Am I saying that properly? So we're looking forward to that. But what is your signature dishes? Would you say those are the signatures for deliveries and you have different ones for the restaurant?
No, we said that I hashtag in Comme Toi, hashtag a name called Gascon Collection. Again, playing with the wording of the company. Mm-hmm. and GCCG. Gascon Collection, it will be more, if that takeaway text goes bigger and bigger, which is starting to be the case, and if we are not reopening Club Gascon at the early stage, we are going to introduce also some high-end cuisine in the Gascon Collection. So at this stage, the food is made at Comme Toi Gascon in the bistro, and I've decided to do something which is more like straightforward, comfort food, something which also linked to the picnic, to the season. Okay, so if you say to me, you have cassoulet. Yeah, cassoulet is not really seasonal, it's a statement. And funnily enough, it's not because we are living at this time of the year. We sell more cassoulet during summertime than wintertime in general. I have no clue why. I can't explain, because it's quite earthy and wintry dish, but we sell cassoulet a lot on summer. So I just wanted, because you can't do cassoulet at home. It's too complex, because you can't have the right ingredients, right. The right beans. It's very difficult. So. And a good cassoulet has to be done in a big quantity. You can't do just a cassoulet for three people. It doesn't work. So obviously this is something which we can deliver and or being collected. The duck confit the same, because if you go to whatever supermarket, high-end or even butcher, they will not find the fatty duck magret or the duck, the leg, the fatty leg. Because for having a duck confit or duck magret, you need to have a duck which has been force-fed, a fat duck.
Yeah.
Okay. You can have some which are very lean. You have in Great Britain, you got some brand doing delivery this, but it's half size, so you don't have the same skin, you don't have the same flavor into it. Anyway, so it means that. This kind of cuisine and Toulouse sausage are very genuine, and so we deliver this and we make this for the weekend for people. And the Marmite Royale is something different. It's more, it's not really Gascon in terms of traditional. Mm-hmm. The Marmite Royale is one of the iconic dish I've designed for the Queen's Jubilee in 2012 and also pre-launching Taste of London at that time. You know, I'm doing Taste of London, the food festival, since roughly the beginning. So it's 14 years now.
Right.
I think I am the vintage person at Taste. Obviously, this year we are not part of it. No, no one is part of Taste this year, but is going back next year. Or no, they are doing winter time, actually. So the Marmite Royale, I really like the message, because Marmite, it's something which is un-French completely. It's made in Britain. And it's, you know, the little underline is love and hate. You love it or you hate it.
Right.
And in France, we got an iconic product, the foie gras, which you love or hate for different reasons. So you've got the lovers and the haters. And I've decided to combine the two in the pot of a Marmite. Right. So I emptied the pot. I did a mix of a foie gras, like a foie gras flan, and I cooked the foie gras flan in the pot. And after that, the Marmite base, I just transform it to mellow it, to make it more accessible for the French palate, I will say. And I cover the sauce, the flan with the sauce, and put the lid on. So when you look at it, you don't believe, or you don't see, because the pot is quite dark, so you don't see that it's something different than the Marmite sauce. So when you open the lid with a spoon, you go inside and you've got this kind of a recipe which define two countries. And you know that France and England are in battle. C'est la bataille. The crunch for the rugby, the covenant, both since centuries. So as a Londoner, as a French Londoner, I will say that for me, that dish represents exactly who I am in UK, what I represent in this country. So it's there is a high content message in this recipe. And this is why I like this product, this recipe, which has been a creation. No one has done it before, this combination.
Well, I'm very excited to try it, because I love foie gras, but I don't really like Marmite.
I'm sure you will be convinced.
Well, I'll let you know how it goes.
Okay, good.
And so we actually live near Hawker House, and you did a pop-up in Hawker House not long ago.
Yeah.
We went to Duck and Roll a while back, and it's quite unusual for a Michelin star chef to do pop-ups. And I obviously know you're very unconventional and you really like to think out of the box, but everything you do is so interesting. Where did that idea come from?
So actually, coming back to the failure of Croque Gascon 10 years before, when we had this kind of fish and chip operation, which became a success, we lost the Croque Gascon style, and the duck burger disappeared. But some other operators saw the story of the duck thing, and they're starting to do this kind of street food with duck. So I don't want to name them, but they started to copy, or actually they just relaunching from the idea we designed a few years back, a new thing with the duck. So when Jonathan Donny with Street Smart decided to as starting this kind of Hawker House, he wanted in the food court, he said, I want a French offer. So he thought of us. He came to see me and I said, okay, why not? Yeah, so let's start to do something a bit crazy. And actually, I'm quite exciting to play with name. And so we're starting with a logo, and it was like a psychedelic duck as a cartoon, because that was, I wanted to do something ducky, but using, actually, so the message was, we use a French duck, but with all the parts of the duck, we'll be treated with a recipe from the world. Okay. So it's not anymore a French restaurant, it's a French product, but more on more accessible to different flavors from the world. So you could have the Asian one, you could have the tortilla style, you know, so you could use the duck of the neck, you pulled it, so you got like a shredded meat. You could have the pastrami. I used to do a pastrami duck burger with the breast on pastrami, like with the bagel, like the American New York style, like the sandwich, the Reuben. We have done recipes like this, you know, which I really enjoyed to do. And that was the setup in the Hawker House. And we name it Duck and Roll as Rock and Roll. So the duck rocks you. The duck is rocking you. So the duck rocks you, and we follow that after this success at Hawker House with Dinerama in Shoreditch. And we stayed 2 years in Dinerama.
Okay.
And after, you know, Dinerama or street food, they want to make new operators coming out, you know, and they do turnover of restaurant inside. So we moved away. So this duck and roll, it's still existing, but it can reopen tomorrow. You know, it depends of the ability to do somewhere in the market. We have done it afterward in Camden. We can do it in Brixton tomorrow. You know, we never know.
Yeah, maybe so in the new garden that you'll be opening up in the summer. So maybe you could do it there?
No, because I think it's a different target. I want to do something more barbecue-y. Duck and roll is not linked to barbecue. Okay. I want to do a proper menu, short, but very linked to the flowers and the edible herbs we have in the garden as well, you know? Yeah. So it would be a kind of... barbecues and bees. Okay. Exactly.
So speaking of flowers, I know you love flowers. You cook with them all the time, and you even love to do the flower arrangements in your restaurant. What is your favorite flower to look at, and what is your favorite flower to eat?
So I discover flowers in this country. Okay. Because when we create Club Gascon back to 1998, we had no money, and I was going to New Covent Garden because the first month of the opening, no one knew us, and we had to pay cash all on delivery because we had no accounts, because we were nobody. So we are physically in front of the meat market in Smithfield, but we don't use the meat market, because we import product from Gascony directly. Mm-hmm. So I had to go to Billingsgate to buy the fish, and I had to go to New Covent Garden to buy vegetable and other stuff. But you know, physically, they are opposite side. So in London, compared to Paris, if you go to Paris to a market, you go to Rungis, which is near Orly, and under one roof, you've got everything. So you don't need to travel all over.
Right.
So the first month, I was so tired during the day because I had no staff. We were three in the kitchen and three upstairs. So I was sleeping in the banquet inside on the restaurant, and I lost 10 kilos.
Oh.
But during that time of the first month, I decided to go to myself with a van to go to the flat, to the New Covent Garden at 4 o'clock in the morning, because it was before going back to work. And I had no, because I was living in Pimlico, and I had no time to go to Pimlico, to go back to the restaurant. It was too complex. So I was, it was a tough time, but only we had one supplier called Jalais at that time who trust us and who supplied us. And because the market was, the vegetable market was next to the flower market, on the way back, I was stopping by the flower market. So I was buying some flowers for decorating the restaurant. But when I say flowers, it was like a bunch of roses. It was just something very tiny. Because we couldn't afford to have a florist company to decorate the restaurant, you know. So time after time, week after week, doing this kind of process, I was going more organized to the market. And and I decided to start to do the flower arrangement at the restaurant on a small scale, a bit bigger, a bit bigger, a bit bigger. So I learned from the flower market, going every week since now two decades, flowers in general, edible flowers more particularly, and also flowers which are going to stay in a restaurant with air conditioning, depending on the season, because you need to think of the height, you need to think of the water, the putrefaction inside after a week, and some flowers which are staying. So you can like some flowers which are never being good for a restaurant, for example, you know. So that's the way I discovered the flower arrangement and the flower to be eaten. That's the way. Now, back to what I like in terms of flowers. My favorite flower is peony, by far. The peonies are the nicest flower ever. Yeah. But I don't use them at all at the restaurant because they are collapsing.
Okay.
So they can be beautiful, and the day after, they are like... I can't use them in a restaurant. It's unsafe.
Right.
To eat flowers after you have a lot of flowers, they are not edible, but you have a lot of flowers which are. And again, I use tulip. I'm sure you know that I'm using tulips because I discovered on a TV few 10 years ago, I couldn't sleep one night, and I've got the satellite here at the front, and I was watching at 2 a.m. Like a program, you know, and normally at night, the programs are very, very strange program. And it was like a farmer alone talking about his farm at 2 a.m., you know, and he just said at that time, oh, I'm going to eat my tulip now. And that I was slightly, you know, sleepy awake, and I was like, what? What is talking about? And he cooked some tulip. And it was like in the middle of nowhere, in his barn. And I was like, okay. So I didn't know that tulips were edible. So I did the research, and obviously they are. And the good thing of the tulip is the season starts in October, finishing in May. So you have like 6 months roughly to play with tulips. And the stem of a tulip has a taste of asparagus. And you just have to steam them. And after you do a stuffing, whatever stuffing you want to do, you need to have a stuffing which will be reheated in 2 minutes or cooked in 2 minutes. So it's either something as a leftover, like a fish cake, for example, which is very unsexy but tasty. And you fill your tulip with the leftover fish cake. You steam your tulip for 2 minutes, and you will have the most beautiful starter ever. You see, it's very simple, you know.
So, yeah, they look amazing. What is the nutritional value, or if any?
Of tulip?
Of for edible flowers. Is there any nutritional value to it?
First of all, you need to know the provenance of it. So mostly with the garden here, I grow things, so I know there are no pesticides. It's all organic, you know. Obviously, when you have a high content volume of tulip, I can't have all the tulips made here. So I've got a supplier which is in Italy. I don't use tulips from Dutch tulips because they are on a mass production. Okay. But if you have artisan tulip or artisan supplier, even on the flowers, the best is to have yourself cutting flowers from the back of your garden because you have planted the bulb and you see the tulips expanding, and you cut them, and you create this kind of funny act with your friends at home. You've got your little garden, and you say, oh, we are going to have the starter now. And you cut some tulips,
yeah.
You stuff it, and you deliver them, and that in half an hour is all done, you know. And that is a very surprising, people don't know, and that's funny, and it's cool. After the nutrition act from the tulip, I don't know.
Okay, so what do you suggest that I do with these? Can you give me like a quick tip on
courgette flower?
Yeah.
Is the replacement on summertime of the tulip. So you have two choices. You can either take the courgette, keeping the flower itself, keeping the full package, mm-hmm. but the cooking will be slightly different. So if you stuff your flower, the courgette is going to be maybe al dente. So you can also cut the bottom and cook it differently. and do the stuffing with the top. So you have two acts. I will say that most of the time I like to use tapioca. You know what is tapioca?
Yes. Yeah.
Tapioca pearls. So if you blanch the tapioca pearl for 6 minutes, cooling down, refreshing, putting some olive oil just to or some oil to make them less sticky, and you do like a brunoise of carrot, herbs, courgette, all raw like this. You season your pearls of tapioca, and you stuff. You put a bit of parmesan, okay, some lemon zest. You stuff your flour into it. You steam them for 2 minutes, and you will have the most wonderful courgette flour stuffed. Very, very easy.
I can't wait. I will definitely. I think I'll probably try that tonight. Actually, while it's still fresh in my mind.
You need to have the tapioca pearl.
Okay, all right. I will definitely do that.
But if you don't have it, doesn't matter. You do vegetable diced. You need to have an equal texture of product inside. Not too big, not too, because it needs to cook at the same time.
Who are your industry inspirations?
Well, you have plenty of, I will say that overall, Alain Ducasse is the master for me. I never worked for him. I met him a few times. Mm-hmm. I think he has developed globally French cuisine on a different format, on a very high level each time. You know, I like to do different things. I don't have his talent, but I admire him because he's able to have enough staff worldwide to just by his name to be joined and to deliver the best, because it's Alain Ducasse. Because when you name Ducasse, of every single on chocolate, on bread, on pâtisserie, on whatever, is always at the top level. And no matter you are in the planet, the deliverance will be on a high level. So for me, achieving this globally, it's incredible.
And when we open up again, which is like a favorite restaurant that you would love to visit? Or do you have a favorite restaurant in London other than your own?
I don't say my restaurants are my favorite. I'm just saying I deliver things. I can't be pleased of what I do. So, you know, I'm not satisfying myself enough to be, you know, pleased of what I deliver. You know, I just need to be always unhappy to progress in a way.
Understood.
But I love to go to the Wolseley, to the Delaunay. I love this kind of big room where you have a great service. Of course, when you have this kind of population, you know, like ambiance. After, I like, there are so many restaurants which I haven't been to, and I'm very sad for those which are not going to reopen, like Ledbury,
yeah.
Like the name we know, which is very sad, because we are maybe on the list, we still don't know. But obviously these places which are closed, I just want to go, you know. It's because it's a missing point. They need to be part of the London scene as they used to be. And it's a shame that what's happened nowadays put us in such a massive trouble.
I know.
Because we don't deserve it. It's not our fault. We are all victims. And it's not fair.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very unfortunate, and it is very sad for restaurants who can't open up. And on that topic, how safe are all of your restaurants? Do you know are you going to open up all of them? Are you safe from closure?
So we don't know if we are going to reopen all of them, because we have 5 places plus the fish and chip. So Catch Me. So obviously for us, Catch Me is the priority, because it's inside the shopping mall and we deliver, but the system is by the counter, so it can be delivered as soon as possible from the reopening directly. So that's the first to open. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we Cigalon, we can reduce to 40 covers because the room is big, so we can make the social distance with Cigalon. So Cigalon is on the pipeline to reopen.
Okay.
We keep Comptoir at this stage closed for the takeaway operation. And club, we don't know yet, because it will depend on the garden and the success of the garden. And maybe we are going to reopen the bar next to club, because it's also, as a bar point of view, which is a lounge bar, we can organize properly a setting on booking, and people will be much more into having a kind of a loungy drinking time and less maybe foodie act. It seems to be more relaxed than for me or for all the Michelin star restaurants. The difficulty is not just to reopen. The difficulty is to find the people coming back. That's the main thing. That's the tricky thing, because, okay, we can have the guideline to reopen on the 4th, but doesn't mean we are going to have the customer back on the 4th. Yeah. To be, if it's shiny like this, summery like this, people will much prefer going outside in the park. So I think the takeaway, the picnic operation is going to increase, and they are going to spend on their budget more in terms of picnic, in terms of what normally they should do in restaurant. They are going to do it more in outside with their friends, because they will have less restrictive moments of behaving. If you go to a gastronomic experience and you need to have all this kind of safety act, which we are going to do, obviously, because if we want to be open, we have to do it. But I'm not sure customers are going to spend, as a testing menu, 3 hours in this kind of configuration. I'm not sure, you know? And this is a bit scary, because if that also, it also depends of where you are located in London. Where we are linked to the City of London. And the City of London is the bank industry. And my friends from the bank industry just told me that they are going to be back at work, some of them, by the end of September, and most of them beginning of next year. So when you do business lunches, or when you have like your clientele is linked to business in general, linked to the bank, to the city, if they are not physically in the area until Christmas, I'm not sure it's a good idea to reopen for just the sake of being reopened. You see what I mean? Because we have the tourism will be on the lack because of the fact that people have already booked things for the summer in part of Europe, which are more south and more open frontiers than us at the moment. So in terms of locals, they are kind of in between. They don't know what to do. I'm sure people want to go outside. For sure, I want to go outside. But if I have to choose between a Michelin star restaurant and a bistro, I will go more to a bistro side, to be more relaxed, to have less complexity.
Yeah.
Safety act, but more relaxed. Because we were, you know, in quarantine, blocked, and we want freedom. And I think the freedom will be acted by being in a park, in a square, or in a bistro with a terrace or terrace. So as I say, the terrace we are trying to create with the garden club, 30 seats outside safely. I think this is something which I will be going if I was a customer.
Yeah.
So well, I believe more on this act than being indoor in a Michelin star restaurant with the service which is all organized. I don't know yet.
I think
I'm still thinking. I'm not saying. Parts. Sorry?
There's lots of different moving parts to it, because there are people who have cancelled, like for us, we've cancelled our summer holidays. So I know for a fact that I will be dining in restaurants more. I love my food experiences, my Michelin stars, my gastronomic experiences. So for sure I will be. I'm happy to go indoors, and I'm, you know, with the limitations now that are in place, I think there is some safety, and you know, there's only so long that you can just stop doing. We've got to get the economy back going as well, and we're all very aware of that. So I think lots of, you know, of course the weather is beautiful and people want to be outside. I think there's so many different ways to think about it. So sending you lots of positivity and light and, you know, good wishes for your openings. But Pascal, I have one more question for you. I've kept you on for well over an hour now. I've learned so much about you that I didn't know before, but I have my one last question, which is, tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know, something that you have not shared with anybody else. It's not on the internet. So it's kind of like a secret.
Okay. Yeah, I can give you a secret. I've been the puppet chef of Michael Jackson.
Oh, wow.
That's a good secret, no?
That's a very good secret. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, I can. So it's quite a funny story. Yeah? Back to 1995 or 1996, something like that. 95, maybe. So Michael Jackson was at the top of the world at that time. He had no problem, you know, with the kids thing. You know, in London, you've got the Madame Tussauds, and in Paris, we have the equivalent called the Musée Grévin, which is the same way, but different name. There was also like a radio called Energy, which is a very famous private radio in France. We organized the arrival as a sponsor of Michael Jackson for his worldwide tour. And the junction was the fact that he was at the Musée Grévin, having his body at the Musée Grévin, and also doing a tour, a worldwide tour with, I don't remember which album was it, but it was in Paris for these two things. Mm-hmm. And I was working for this catering company, which I talked to you beforehand. Yeah, yes. And that company won the budget for doing this event. And this event was so, I would say, crazy, and people were mad because the radio was announcing the arrival of Michael Jackson. And it was on a Sunday morning in Paris near the opera, where you had the avenue all blocked, and you had thousands of people in front of the Museum of Grévin. Roads were blocked, and inside the Museum of Grévin, you got the theater and you got the gallery where you have all the bodies of famous people. In the theater, you had all the stars, but live. So you had Catherine Deneuve, you had the famous stars in France were invited for a party for lunchtime. So Michael Jackson arrived, and in a limousine, so people were, you know, shouting all over. It was like insane in the street. He arrived in the museum. He arrived on the theater, and he was doing a kind of showcasing with his twin on stage. Of course, applauded by all the celebrity people at that time. And after he disappeared. And he disappeared at the back of the building to a special room where I was there just for him. So there were like 15 people. So you have the Min Marceau and some other VIP, but not VIP, like famous people, VIP for his security, for himself. And his assistant has asked us to create a fountain of Smarties in the middle of the room. So we create this kind of mechanic fountain of Smarties like this, you know, which was strange. And on the side, I had like a table where like a kitchen table, just myself, and feeding the 15 people which were located in his room. And Michael was just having his hand on the table next to me. And I was like kind of shaking because you imagine that you have the people shouting in the street, you have all the celebrities on the side, and you are just for 1 hour or more with the man himself and his best friend, and you need to cook and to don't miss it, you know? And actually, you can't miss it because you're out otherwise. And actually, I was doing this kind of, again, some duck. You see, duck is following me all the time. Duck with the hoisin sauce wrapping, so a bit of the Chinese act. And at one point, Michael Jackson turned, looked at me, looked at what I was doing. So I was starting to, not shaking, but I was stressed. And he looked at me and he said, "Is this a real duck?" And I said, "Yes, Michael, it's a real duck." And he looked at me and he said, "Oh no, I can't eat duck."
Oh my God!
And voilà.
Oh no!
So I've been the private chef of Michael Jackson, who never ate my food, the most VIP moment in Paris, where everybody, all the scene, was there. That was a secret part.
That is a brilliant story. I can't believe it.
Yeah. But the rest of the people, the other 15, they ate the meat. They ate the duck, except Michael.
And was he happy at least with the fountain, with the chocolate fountain that
he didn't touch the fountain. He didn't touch the fountain. He didn't eat at all, but it was so... But he was happy at the end. But I think it's Michael was Michael. You know, I don't think he eats. He's not... he doesn't eat, maybe. That's something else. Anyway, that was the story.
Okay, well, thank you so much for sharing with us. And my gosh, almost 2 hours we've been together, and it's been
a
joy. Absolutely such a pleasure being with you and hearing your stories. Thank you so much for your time. And
you.
And guys, if you want to follow Pascal on Instagram, he is, just remind me of your Instagram handle, Pascal.
Yeah, so all my social media are at Le Chef Pasqui, because Pasqui is my nickname for Pascal, P-A-S-K-I.
Perfect. And I'm at Poshnoshgal. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Merci beaucoup. Merci. À bientôt.